How many actual families are living here?
One, two, three.
Three families?
Yeah.
From Wyoming Public Media, this is The Modern West. I'm Micah Schweitzer. This month on the show, it's the second installment of our series we're calling The Native West, exploring issues for Wyoming's Eastern Shoshone and Northern Arapaho tribes. On this episode, we'll focus on housing shortages on the Wind River Reservation. The reservation was created back in 1868 with over 2.2 million acres. The Northern Arapaho tribe has reached a population of 11,000, and the Eastern Shoshone is almost 5,000 strong. But while the number of people has been expanding, the number of homes where all those people can live has not. Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards reports the situation has led to severe overcrowding and the social problems that come with that.
Northern Arapaho elder Kenneth Shakespeare has lived in this house north of Arapaho with its view of the mountains and fertile hayfields for a lot of years.
I'll say about 20-some years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bought this land here when I was working South Pass.
He raised 7 children here, but now he's in the early stages of dementia, and it's his kids' turn to take care of him. His daughter, Linnell, gives me a tour of the 4-bedroom, 2-bath home she grew up in.
Yeah, so that's this room. This is his. Over here, and then is there
my
somebody?
My sister sleeps will, in? Stay, will stay every now and then, and that's where she sleeps.
Uh-huh.
With her grandkids.
Plus 3 of her children live here with their own families. To be clear, at any given time, between 10 and 13 people live with Kenneth Shakespeare. Linnell herself lives nearby and shares her home with another daughter and her family. But between the two households, there isn't a lot of income.
Right now, we're really hurting.
Part of the problem is that Linnell hasn't been able to work the last couple years since she got cancer. Only 2 of the 17 people in these households is currently getting a paycheck right now. And when you add in her dad's Social Security, that's not much. But it's not just them. The median household income on the reservation is only $16,000, compared to the rest of Wyoming that earns $54,000. And that's with multiple families pooling their resources.
I'm sleeping with my mom and dad. We're in that room with that bunk bed and stuff.
That's Linnell's 8-year-old granddaughter, Taya Dixie.
I like to sew in there. I sew keychains and stuff.
Linnell says it would be nice if Taya's family could move into a trailer they have on the property, but says that would cost $6,000 they don't have just to install an electrical pole. Linnell says one of her daughters is on the waiting list for low-cost tribal housing, but has been waiting for 2 years. But Linnell says even if you get it, it can be sketchy.
But you get to Arapaho, oh, it's bad. Just drive through there and you'll look at the yards. Ain't really yards, they're just dirt. Dogs will take off after you. There's nothing they'll do about it if they bite you and hurt you.
And so for now, Linnell says her family prefers to live together and take care of their elders, even if it is crowded. Northern Arapaho Tribal Housing Director Patrick Goggles says many families make the same decision, even his.
A grandparent, parents, and the children, and maybe the older brother, that's not uncommon. We find that a cultural value that enhances our family life.
But due to a high birth rate that Goggles says has led to a sudden population explosion on the reservation, that traditional lifestyle is strained, and the need for housing is greater than ever before.
We determined then we needed 600 units to meet the entire need.
But right now, there's only 230 units for the entire tribe. That means over 55% of the tribe could be categorized as homeless because they're couch surfing or aren't the primary owner or renter of the place where they sleep. Northern Arapaho Tribal Administrator Vonda Wells recently gave a talk at a Native health conference on the health effects of overcrowding.
In a home where there's no space, where people are all trying to find their own place and there's nowhere to, you know, to relax, people get stressed and violence happens.
And she says with more domestic violence comes chronic illness, hypertension, diabetes, heart disease. And she says overcrowding is especially hard on kids.
One of the examples would be, you know, this little boy was sleeping on a bench. This child, you know, rolling off the bench, getting back up on there, laying down again, it being hard. Your body is sore. and then sending this child to school. And then him, you know, trying to learn, trying to think about what his teacher's telling him, and he's exhausted.
Wells says going forward, tribal leaders have been brainstorming ways to eliminate overcrowding without giving up on multi-generational living. She says new housing designs should accommodate lots of families with 6 or 10 bedrooms and lots of bathrooms. Tribal housing director Goggles shares that vision.
A vaulted ceiling that gives the living room and the kitchen a larger look, but it allows the family to have birthdays, ceremonies. We have wakes in our homes.
For the Shakespeare family, such a roomy kitchen would be great today. The family is drying elk meat.
Oh, is this the elk meat, Jojo?
Elk meat.
Drying it.
Is there a hunter in the family? Is that right?
But there is one big obstacle for tribes who want to design homes to better fit their cultural lives, and that's money.
The Tribal Court Clearinghouse conducted Native American housing studies in the early 2000s. It found the number of homes with more than 6 people living in them grew by 5% for Eastern Shoshone homes and by over 10% for Northern Arapaho homes. It turns out the reason is there are a lot of hurdles for tribes to jump through to get new housing developments funded. Melody Edwards spoke with several workers in Fort Washakie.
In the heart of the town of Fort Washakie on the Wind River Reservation, workers are putting the finishing touches on the Tygee Village, a low-income tribal housing development. Brian Mann is the deputy director of the Eastern Shoshone Tribal Housing Authority, and he's showing me around.
Do you mind if we walk over and kind of take a closer look at this community center? I don't know if we'll be needing hard hats here, but...
I think we're out of the hard hats, so...
Okay.
Mann says it's taken years to get the money to demolish the old housing development that was full of asbestos and lead paint and build this new one. 20 stylish single-family homes are arranged in a modern neighborhood. 8 families have already moved in. We tiptoe through the construction zone to the community center in the middle of the cul-de-sac.
The building has a round front with the nearly floor-to-ceiling windows. You know, in Native culture, the circle represents many things, in the circle of life, and we try to implement that here.
The plan is to host events and classes here for the whole tribe, but renting a house at Tygee Village won't be easy. There are over 60 families on the waiting list right now.
The waiting list can take years, and when you look at the list, some people have submitted applications in the early 2000s and mid-2000s.
The list got even longer as the process of funding the new development went on year after year.
And the main challenge was finding the dollars to make the Tygee project happen. That literally took 2 years of financial review.
Mann says applications for housing projects like this one are often highly competitive, pitting tribal housing projects against state ones. And the federal scoring process is often biased against rural housing projects.
You have to have a project that is within so many miles of conveniences, including stores, schools, access to healthcare, community facilities.
The closest cities to the reservation are Riverton and Lander, both small, under 10,000 people. Mann says after 2 attempts, the Eastern Shoshone finally succeeded at getting a $2.7 million low-income tax credit project, which gives investors 10 years of tax credits in exchange for money for low-income housing projects. And they've used successes like that one to leverage more capital. In 2014, they received a total of $6.4 million to build and remodel low-income housing for the tribe. Now, the Northern Arapaho is waiting to hear whether their proposed black coal housing project can get those same low-income tax credit funds.
In the business I'm in, you never have all the funds or resources you need because they're all competitive.
That's Northern Arapaho Tribal Housing Director Patrick Goggles. Goggles says his tribe is growing, and with 60% of his population now under the age of 20, they need to build bigger homes that can accommodate the cultural family traditions of the tribe. Homes with mini bedrooms and bathrooms where multiple generations can live comfortably. He says most of the grants and loans available are only for low-income homes, not working class.
There's your workforce. And they're pretty much the backbone of the Northern Arapaho tribe because they're the workers, whether they're a single or dual family income, that take care of the relatives.
Leslie Wright is deputy director of the Wyoming Community Development Authority, the state agency that approves applications like the Low Income Tax Credit Program on behalf of the federal government. She says her agency doesn't have a good way to gauge the true housing needs of Wyoming in general, let alone the reservation. They only know there's a need when developers approach them with proposals. But most developers suggest projects for the upper income bracket. Federal programs help cover lower income needs, but there's a gap in the middle, right where those backbone workers fall.
That gap has been really difficult to fill, and gosh, I wish we knew how to do that.
Technically, the government is obligated to figure out how to do that. In 1998, Congress passed the Native American Housing Assistance and Self-Determination Act, which promises tribes, quote, affordable housing in safe, healthy environments. The Native American program through Housing and Urban Development prides itself on using a formula developed in collaboration with tribes to fund some of its housing projects, rather than the usual competitive approach. Heidi Frechette is the Deputy Assistant Secretary for HUD's Native American Program in Washington, D.C. She says the problem is inflation has been eating away at the $650 million a year appropriated to keep up with Native housing needs.
And with the aging housing stock, we're finding that folks are using more and more of their funds to rehab or repair existing homes and have less buying power and ability to construct new homes.
Northern Arapaho Patrick Goggles says quality housing for all economic levels of the Native community is fundamental. And it's not just because the feds are legally obligated to tribes.
As a matter of fact, I'm a federal taxpayer. I expect the federal government to allocate federal dollars to this reservation because I pay those federal taxes. That's a given for me.
And this housing crisis has led to high rates of homelessness in Fremont County. But Melody found that on rural reservations like the Wind River, homelessness doesn't look much like it does in big cities.
Last spring, when the rains came pouring through his roof, 85-year-old Hugh Ridgely moved out of his house and into his truck. Sitting behind his steering wheel, he points out the window at a ramshackle cabin under the cottonwoods.
See, this old house is old log house. My dad built that back in, I guess, early 30s, 35, somewhere. And he just used an axe and team of horses.
It was his relative, Linnell Shakespeare, who lived nearby, who first realized what was going on.
So when I did, it was the evening time, and I pulled in, and he was sitting on his truck. And I gave him some food, and he just ate it real fast, and he was real hungry. I see you got enough blankets because he just had a jacket over his legs. And I says, how come you're sleeping in your truck? He said, my house flooded out. And I said, oh man. When I left, I started crying.
Hugh Ridgely is a decorated Korean War veteran who fought in the Battle of Bunker Hill, one of only 9 soldiers out of 250 who survived. But Shakespeare says,
it ain't just because he's a vet. He's an elder. He's one of the last that know our native language, the old style. God, he's 85 years old.
Shakespeare offered to let him live in a spare room at her house.
He said, no. He says, it's my home. He said, I'm not leaving it.
She shows me the flood damage to his home.
This is where the mold, or the water was coming, and it flooded this whole thing.
So just the roof just gave out right here. Yeah. So is this kind of mold in here? That's kind of what we're looking at.
And it's all over. It's all over in there.
Shakespeare tried to clean up the mold in his house herself, but soon realized she needed help. She turned to Cherokee Brown, a longtime veteran advocate on the reservation.
Every family on the reservation, I can tell you, has at least one veteran in their family, if not more. Every family.
But even so, for years, getting home loans through the Veterans Administration for repairs like Ridgely's has been impossible because of a legal technicality based on where his home is. The VA doesn't have a legal agreement to give these loans on the Wind River Reservation yet. Although they're in the final stages of completing that process, it was clear to Brown it wouldn't happen in time for winter. She says another option, through the Volunteers of America, offered to pay for him to move to town.
But since he's not willing to move from his home, which is on tribal land, into town, which, why should he? This is his home. This is where his roots are. This is where his family was raised. He shouldn't have to move to have access to those dollars or to those funds.
Since Ridgely won't move, the Northern Arapaho tribe paid for a travel trailer to install on his property. For over a week, Stanford and James St. Clair from the Tribal Employment Rights Office have been hooking it up.
This here is, we're tying into the sewer system.
Hooked up electricity?
Yep.
Yeah, and then we put some water out there.
We leveled the camper.
Veteran advocate Brown says veterans are humble and won't necessarily ask for this kind of help.
Thing is, there's so many of other veterans out there that need the same thing. They face the same challenges that he's facing right now.
Brown says there are 300 homeless families on the reservation right now. But like Ridgely, they aren't necessarily on the street. Here, people make room, squeezing in wherever they can. But it's a slippery slope, and sometimes they do end up sleeping in a vehicle or at a park. Since 2014, when the state hired a homelessness coordinator and began conducting point-in-time counts of homeless people, Fremont County has had some of the highest numbers. Last January, about 100 unsheltered homeless were counted here.
But that doesn't even count or include the individuals who stay from house to house.
That's homeless advocate Charles Aragon, the organizer of a recent conference on homelessness in Riverton. He says the reservation housing shortage creates a cycle that feeds on itself, especially when several families rely on only one or two vehicles and can't always make it to work or school. Aragon says that leads to depression, alcoholism, health problems.
And so they don't have any other option either to go out onto the streets, or some people have lived in their vehicles. It's hard to find a way out, hard to find that one or two people who's going to help you out.
For Korean vet Hugh Ridgely, though, he's found a few people to keep him from sleeping in his truck this winter. But with these sub-zero temperatures, the solution isn't a permanent one for an elderly man. The question is whether the VA will find a way through the red tape to help him rebuild his family home in time for next winter.
Because of overcrowding on the reservation, many Native Americans are often forced to find rentals in border communities off the reservation. But even there, they struggle to find places to live because of racial discrimination. Melody spoke with renters and homeowners in the border towns of Lander and Riverton.
Ken Heba grew up in Denver, but a few years ago he moved to Lander to get a job as a nurse and to be closer to his Eastern Shoshone family members on the reservation. A few months ago, he had a falling out with his landlord and moved out. Since then, Heba has been unable to find a new place to live. He says he doesn't need much.
More like a one-bedroom, just for me.
Heba says until he finds his own place, he's forced to double up with his sister in Fort Washakie. He says even with his good credit and references, landlords just won't rent to him.
That's the first question. Do you party? Do you drink? Do you have a lot of people? Because they already assume I'm going to do something like that. And that's where I feel I'm being discriminated because of my race.
Such stories are common in Fremont County, says Jane Juvie. She's the community relations ombudsman in the Riverton Police. Her position was created in 2015 after a white City Park employee shot two Native Americans at a recovery center in town. One Native woman told Juvie about the time that she tried to arrange to view an apartment over the phone.
When the landlord saw that she was Native American, the rent that she'd been told was going to be charged over the phone all of a sudden went up by $600 or $700, and there was no way she could afford it.
Because of such cases, Juvie helped host a training in Riverton last summer for landlords to teach them about Wyoming's fair housing law. She says a lot of times landlords are biased unknowingly. For instance, turning away tenants who don't have much credit history or refusing to rent to someone because of their last name.
Yeah, the stigma of, I rented to someone in that family before, so never again, even though it might be a cousin 12 times removed, right.
Juvie says such things can qualify as discrimination. I take a ride with landlord Dave Kellogg in his old VW Bug to see some of the apartment buildings he owns around Lander.
This is the unit here?
This is an apartment house, and interestingly, this little trailer court is mine also. The trailers are individually owned.
Kellogg says mostly he rents two-bedroom, one-bath apartments, charging about $650 a month, a good deal for low-income families. But over the years, Kellogg has learned to set strict rules.
I had a rental manager for a while who would just rent to anybody. And I finally had to fire him and throw everybody out because I just had the place was just trashed. spent about $15,000 fixing it. And then I'm now re-renting that, but I'm being very, very careful.
Careful by requiring tenants to provide detailed credit histories and plenty of references, something Native American applicants don't always have.
The Native Americans are less able, in many instances, to meet the amount of information I want to have on that credit application.
Like, can you give me some examples?
A lot of them don't have a bank account.
He tries to be flexible on an individual basis, but he says he can't treat his rental business like a charity because he has too much money at stake. Still, there are some things he won't budge on, like only allowing one family per apartment. This one might be the hardest for Native families because many prefer to live multi-generationally. Kellogg says most of the time people comply, but a few years back...
I had one, and unfortunately it was Native American, that moved in, she and her boyfriend, and they had a couple of kids. And then all of a sudden there was five kids in the apartment. And nobody wanted to admit to where they came from or do anything about getting them out.
So Kellogg asked them to leave. I told this story to Lyle Conkle, the field director for housing and urban development in Casper.
Was that one in his rights?
No. The fair housing law is oftentimes, as I said before, they discriminate unknowingly. You cannot put a number on how many people can live in a unit.
But Conkle says Dave Kellogg was in his rights as a landlord to use a strict credit history application, but...
Here's the key. If you treat them like you treat everybody else in your application process, that's acceptable. But everyone has to be treated the same.
Conkle says he only wishes more Native Americans would file housing discrimination complaints so HUD could have a better idea how pervasive discrimination is in reservation border towns. A 2003 HUD study shows that 1 in 4 Native American renters experience housing discrimination in their life. But in the last 10 years, only 4 people filed for racial discrimination in Fremont County. Meanwhile, the struggle to find a home there continues for Ken Heba, still living stacked up with his sister on the reservation.
I'm just like, if someone would rent me a place, I will take it.
For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Melody Edwards.
And that's it for this edition of The Modern West. If you missed it, the first part of the series is at wyomingpublicmedia.org and wherever you download your podcasts. And our next episode will be out on the third Tuesday of the month. Caitlin Tan produced the show. Anna Rader is our web editor. The theme music is by Jeff Troxell, and I'm Micah Schweitzer. The Modern West is a production of Wyoming Public Media.